Welcome to Let's Talk About Gay Stuff. Woo! Ooh, hello. We're the podcast where we talk about gay stuff and discuss LGBTQ plus history. I am Thomas.
Chris.
Dusty.
And this week we're going to talk to you about Tyler Perry and Ethel Kane.
Woohoo! I'm so excited about that.
Yeah.
Hell yeah, brother.
Hell yeah, brother. You know what, brother? If you're listening to this podcast, what I encourage you to subscribe so you can hear future episodes. You can visit our website at letstalkaboutgaystuff.com and follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Let's Talk About Gay Stuff and on Twitter at Talk Gay Stuff. Hey, if you're listening to this podcast, why don't you go ahead and press a 5-star review for us, all right? Tell us what you think. And you want to follow us on the socials because we give you a daily dose of LGBTQ plus history. How's that for gay stuff?
I was in high school now.
Wow, we are now paying for people to do voiceovers here. Wow.
Look at that.
Local celebrity that is from New Braunfels, Texas. But hey.
New Braunfels.
Congratulations.
New Braunfels. New Braunfels. That hard ass was very important.
Hey, but thank you for that, Elvis McGuire.
I also love, like, it just reminded me, like, for my students, whenever you come up from lunch, I always make them go to the bathroom. They always sit along the wall. And whenever I'm done monitoring the bathrooms, they come up and I'm like, "All rise, the honor roll, Mr. White is presiding." And they're like, "All rise." Like, it's very funny. Anyway.
They're like, "Here comes."
So you're just raising.
Look at that gay boy.
You're raising a cult.
I really am.
Wonderful. Good job for you. How was school? We haven't talked to you to fine gents since
we
started.
3 weeks in?
This
is the end of 3 weeks, yeah.
Yeah, last time we spoke, we were like dabbling
ready
in the pre-service, yeah.
Dabbling.
Who dabbled my pre-service?
Oh my. How has everything since the pre-service?
Sometimes I wish we had video footage of the things and the faces that we make.
pre-service.
I have a face for podcasts.
I thought you was going to say you have a face for something else.
Hello.
Oh.
I thought you were going to go with pre-service. I thought we were still riding that train.
Oh. I'm on that train.
It's Friday night and Dusty is feeling frisky.
Bring it down a notch, girl.
School's good. Glad to be back.
It's busy.
Yeah.
I'm tired.
A lot of changes and constant like, "Hey, do this now too." And I'm like, "Do you realize that I have like 8 hours of a day and I'm supposed to be teaching children for like 5 of them. When am I doing that?"
What do you do for them? 3 hours.
Yeah, what do you
get 3 hours to sit around and dissociate?
You get a 3-hour break?
Oh, yeah. You don't get a 3-hour break?
Lunch, no. Centers, and what else do you do?
I had a 6-hour lunch break. Or six minute lunch break
the
other day.
What happened to the rest of them?
I had a meeting. That was sprung on me, and I was like, "Yeah, I like
no,
literally
I
only
get
have
lunch, and then I get like 4 days a week. I have what do you call like enrichment? So that's like 50.
Yeah,
days. Wow. So where's your 3 hours come from? That's only for me.
Okay,
that's
so
only
30
like
minutes of lunch, and then they go to enrichment, and then go to recess, and then we have 20 minutes afterwards.
Oh, you're not out there with recess?
Well, I go out there with them, but I don't.
That's not a break.
I don't let them talk to me.
If I'm having to watch them, it's not a break.
Oh, you watch them?
Yeah, I totally watch them.
There's a fence. They're not going anywhere.
They're doing things. One of them fell.
I had somebody fall today, too.
No, fell in a ditch.
Oh, jeez.
We have, like, this little ditch that was literally created to, like, create, like, a stream, like a bayou, essentially. Aww. Where it's supposed to be designed as an idea. Like as a science space, essentially, and it has since essentially filled in with mud, and so it no longer is that. But there is still that nice ditch, and this child chose to go swimming, essentially.
Ew. Did y'all find
in
him?
In water about this deep. It was not that deep. Yeah, I found him afterwards. He was covered in mud, and so I said, "Do not sit in my classroom." And so he wasn't allowed in my classroom.
Why would he sit?
I don't know. I don't
what
ask.
Age?
He was first grade.
Chris, that kid died 10 years ago.
That kid doesn't exist.
He doesn't exist.
He's never a figment of my imagination.
He never was in your classroom.
Chris, you weren't actually a teacher. Wake up. Wake up.
What? Hello.
Wake up. Yeah.
Well, you know, if nothing else, you can give them treats. Well, I guess you really couldn't give them, treats. You can't give them, like, dog treats or CBD treats. No,
you
like,
you can't reward their behavior. Like, you're not allowed
to give them. That is a reward. Because if they were dogs, you could give them CBD treats, like those Baked Bones dog treats. Oh, these aren't just any treats. They are especially Baked Bones. They have CBD, which is great because CBD has been shown to help reduce stress and anxiety in both humans and dogs. And again, these treats are for dogs, not for small children. Okay? Just to be crystal clear. So thankfully, Baked Bones has your dog covered. Definitely your dogs will surely love them because I know my dogs do. They're made from organic human-grade ingredients and full-spectrum hemp oil. Their bones may offer some relief to your anxious pup. You can check out BakedBones.com for more information on CBD for dogs and the other benefits it may provide. Baked Bones offers free shipping on all orders over $25, and you can save 15% using promo code GAYSTUFF15. What? That's GAYSTUFF15. Baked Bones is LGBTQ+ owned and operated and is based in Houston, Texas. Baked Bones proudly donates 10% of all of its profits to no-kill shelters in the U.S. Baked Bones, baked dogs, happy.
No chill shelters.
No children shelters. No shit shelters. There's no shit there.
No chill shelters. They have no chill.
Operate at a high level of anxiety all day long.
Literally 0% chill.
What was that? I'm talking.
Was I talking?
I'll wait.
Was I talking?
I can wait.
Was I talking?
No, you're making fun of me now. I thought we were being teacher jokes.
Making fun of you earlier. Was I talking? But that can be a teacher joke too.
It was. And in Dusty's defense, it was a lapse of like, wait, what was I? Was I talking?
But the way wasn't like abuse.
But you interpreted it like, was I talking?
Because like you were right behind him, and I was like, oh. Is this how the night is going?
I felt something. Did you feel that?
This house is haunted, I'm going to
lose it. No, but it felt like a huge breeze. Maybe the air kicked on. Or maybe a ghost.
Oh, you felt the spirit. Jesus!
Take the wheel.
Oh, we'll talk about Tyler Perry in a bit.
Okay.
He definitely felt the Jesus. But anyways, what else school for the summer.
School for the summer.
Demi Lovato was on the VMAs, wasn't she, recently? They just came out. They were on the VMAs, yes?
I did not see the VMAs.
The VMAs? None of us saw the VMAs. So what kind of gays are we?
I used to keep up with it when I was on the Twitter that doesn't exist MTV anymore.
I don't have
it. I don't get
where
it
comes into my house.
You don't receive it.
He doesn't receive it.
You don't receive it?
I don't let it in.
Well, no. Shit. So people aren't watching the VMAs anymore.
Because they don't fucking matter.
Whether Taylor Swift wins 16 awards, I mean, that is a big deal.
Her and Beyonce, who else is winning?
Cultural moments. These are cultural moments. NSYNC came back to give Taylor Swift an award.
They have the new commercial, don't they?
Who?
NSYNC?
No, or the Backstreet Boys.
Oh, right. Shit, never mind.
They do the Downey, whatever. Kind of funny.
But the one thing I didn't watch anything out of that. I saw the pictures of NSYNC, which I thought was cool. That's some of VMA does those sorts of things. But Shakira she got the Icon Award or something like that. The Vanguard Award, and she gave a performance. Oh. It was good. And this time she didn't have to share, a 13-minute segment with J-Lo. So became.
Those hips don't lie.
She did that. It was good. She's good. Olé. I know everyone didn't like the fact that she went during the halftime show.
That's a cultural thing,
yes,
though.
Yes, and she did it again. Because she was like, I know all y'all haters going to hate.
Yeah. I don't understand why people. That's white people.
White people.
You're white people.
Yeah, I'm awful. You're white.
But your name is white.
Oh, shit.
No chill. No chill shelter here.
Less fun pop culture news. Kansas decided to get on the anti-trans an anti-non-binary train. They're no longer changing trans people's birth certificates to reflect their gender identities. The state health department there said, "No, we don't want to do that because there's a law that prohibits us from doing that. So we have got to follow the law that the GOP controlled legislature passed there. They have a Democratic governor. That GOP legislator overrode the governor.
Riding over who?
That's sexist because she's a woman. You're saying that. Yeah. Okay. Okay.
Misogynist. Look at that misogyny come out. No chill. Misogynist. No chill shelter here.
No chill. And so.
I'm gonna lose it.
Yeah. So. Anyways, that's on. Like, so the anti-trans crusade continues. Can I just pivot a little bit? We were talking before.
What if I say no?
Well, this is related to you, so. Okay. Oh, okay. All right.
Okay.
All right. We said no chill. And you mentioned earlier you were telling us a personal anecdote of some pursuits that were going on in your personal life. And you said there was a term that was.
Oh, God, I have a problem with this.
What was the term? What was the term?
It wasn't a date you went on today. What was
a vibe check.
It was a vibe check.
No.
What the fuck is a vibe check?
Okay, and what my thing is. This person, I don't think the age goes with this statement.
Wait, how old is she? 30, he, 32. A boy. Oh, the man is a 32.
Don't assume that I'm dating a woman.
I was like,
it's not happening.
32.
Oh my God, y'all.
I check.
32.
What if he listens to this podcast? I told him about it.
Well, hello, you.
Hello.
You'll ever hear reading.
It's a good thing. It's a good thing you're good looking, you know? Because
he's very handsome.
It'll never
Oh my God! Oh. But I don't like.
See, now it's incentive. I did that for you, Chris.
Now he's got to prove. He's got to prove Thomas wrong.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, oh, I'm not gonna let that bastard win. Come on, vibe check me.
So when you have a vibe check at the end, did you pass the check?
I don't know. Was there a red light? Me, so I think so. I don't know.
What did he text you? I mean, this is the truth.
He enjoyed the date, and then
date. I thought it wasn't a date.
Oh, I'm sorry, not date.
Did he say vibe check?
Did he say we're vibing? Talked.
Hey. I don't know if I passed the vibe.
He said, "I think we're vibing now." What's the vibe? You should text him. What's the vibe? You should text him right now, and then we see.
Live results on the podcast.
Isn't the whole point of a vibe check like when you're talking to
them? Okay, so the whole
setting
problem,
up.
See,
the date,
I like the.
Isn't that the like? Okay, are okay, you gonna okay. meet
hold
somebody?
Hold on.
This is so they can have.
So this is a no chill
eye
shelter
contact.
Here, okay?
Oh.
No chill shelter. So I swear to God, nobody died.
Well, yeah, in this house, but that I mean, this land has been here for.
This land is your land.
This land was there.
This land is my land.
Anyways,
oh, well, we got a what was it? What was our friend from New Braunfels? Elvis has come back.
Into the building.
It's like Cher singing her Christmas song.
I cannot fucking wait. It's gonna be everything. You just wait.
That's how she says.
So
vibe check.
So Cher's coming out with a Christmas album.
Wait, it comes out like in a month.
No, Halloween.
It comes Halloween's
in about a month.
No, like after Halloween. It has to be after Halloween.
No. Sound like that.
I don't need to listen to Cher Christmas songs before Halloween.
No.
Ho, ho, ho.
I don't know. I was going to say, it could be kind of scary. It could be great.
Anyway, vibe check. Because I'm not done talking
about this. Vibe check.
I have
See, the whole thing with like online dating nowadays is... like you message someone and like they could be either really good or really bad at texting. And of course,
that's
the ones who are really
check.
Bad at no, because like even if they're good at texting, you get to like meet them and they're fucking weird.
But there has to be some vibe that has been checked, or else you're not going to go meet this potential murderer in person. IRL is probably what he says.
How am I going to do
IRL?
What does IRL mean
in real life?
Oh. I just feel like
for the listeners,
it just feels a little.
Anyone who's older than us,
it seems douchey.
Ooh, douchey,
and he doesn't appear like he could be. I just don't like that term. I feel like it's very
well.
Like,
someone's got to be douchey.
Oh,
giving and receiving.
Oh, hello.
Look at that pun.
Oh,
anywho. I don't like the term biped. I think plus for somebody that age, I feel like
there's a lot really of lights on
32 years old saying vibe check. I feel like that's wrong generation.
It's the wrong generation.
I was expecting you to say he was like 25, 26.
Yeah, I do think.
Why? Because I only date younger people?
No, because he said vibe check.
Oh.
You know what? He's going to come and he's going to be part of Chris's life and you're going to love it, Dusty.
Well, hopefully I pass the vibe check.
Yeah,
because we're going to have to fucking see.
This is
a no chill.
But is that a new thing in like dating?
I don't fucking know.
Wait, so let me.
I'm really dating anyone.
You met him
online. You're vibe checking.
I just keep fucking people.
You met him online?
Yes.
Okay. So when was the first time you talked to him? Like when you went out on a date?
Like 2 weeks ago? No.
Like in person.
Okay.
Like,
well, this was our first time meeting.
Okay. So you met in person. Did you ever talk to him on the phone before you met him in person? No.
Oh, God. He talks on the phone.
Anymore. Well, I know. I'm just thinking. I'm
Who
gonna
has
put
a
on,
phone?
I'm going to. I'm gonna you go to what do you do? Go to the public library.
I have a pocket. And,
well, that's called cruising.
Yes. But I'm thinking, Dusty, like, put yourself once upon a time when back.
It was
in,
last year.
The
Hinge. That's where I met Ben.
In the 90s.
Who?
Wait. Oh, him. No, I'm saying in the 90s and like oh, two God. Early 2000s when you were dating
the glory hole.
Maybe. You would have never just well. We didn't have texting then, but I'm like you would have had a phone
it's called
call.
Text Mexican.
You would have
true.
You would have had a phone call. Like you would have never met know. Someone in person without talking to them on the phone and doing a vibe check. Is full circle. I've come back.
But that's the texting. Everybody texts. Who talks?
I know.
On the phone?
I agree. Yeah, I wouldn't do that. Either.
Like I mean, I'm very good at texting, but I am so terrible everywhere else. Anyways.
But no, there's. I mean,
I feel like if you're gonna meet with someone, there has already been some vibe checked.
Yes.
So then why? So then it was a date. Like, why not call it a date? I feel by saying it's that because
you
like,
know the gays don't like labels.
Exactly. But I think that. But that's where maybe that's
no
where
labels.
I have the problem. With. It's like
I have to.
It's not a date.
The worst with
I'm not
fucking dating
date.
Is that I scare men off by saying like, "Let's go on a date." Instead, I have to be like, "Hey, like, let's hang out again."
I feel like this.
Like
is
I've
a
used
topic
the word "hang
sex
out"
in the city like 20 years ago. Carrie. And I couldn't
My name's
wonder,
Chris.
Did I pass the vibe check? I feel Hold like
on,
this
guys.
Is...
Let me...
But like, you know did what I'm saying? I feel like... Yes, you did.
Oh,
I love
Thanks.
That. I'm loving... and just like that. Anywho, I love that. But I don't like it. I feel like it's the whole like, oh, it's not. No, it's still a date. You can call it a vibe. It's a date. You met someone to see.
Like you tell your friends it was a vibe check. You don't tell the person you're dating that it was a
maybe
vibe check.
That's maybe that's
like,
it. Maybe
like,
that's
oh,
it.
Like,
yes.
Oh, so Dusty, you're going out?
It,
like,
yes,
yeah,
maybe
you're like,
that's
it's
it,
a,
it
like,
vibe.
Is he cute? Like,
I'm
I don't
gonna,
know. Like, is it
I'm
a date?
Meet with you. I'm not really interested in you. But this, if I call it a vibe check, then I can just totally say, oh my God, you hag. I'm just going to.
Yeah,
you would move past you because it was just a vibe check. Thank God it wasn't a date.
That's exactly
it's
right.
It's a fucking date, though. You went out.
Yeah, in the 50s, they would have called that a date, right? Because it was like you
no,
think
they
about
call
the
it marriage.
The
I
1950s,
it a date
they were
last
like,
week.
Oh, you talked to a, you went in this. You were in the same room as a girl. It was or a boy. Sorry,
you have a lot of roles that you're playing tonight.
Yeah,
I'm
thank
sorry.
You.
A lot of hats. Yeah, a lot of hats.
A lot of hats.
I just I feel like it's
I got a top hat. I got
I
a swirly like hat.
You got a cowboy hat.
I got a cowboy hat
from New Braunfels.
I feel
New
like Braunfels. It's overly like trying too hard. Like. We're too cool to go out on a date. I'm going to be... It's a vibe. No, I don't like...
Okay, so if Eric...
I don't... Ironically, I don't like the vibe.
This man gets. Ever listens to this podcast.
He got a lot of airtime.
Well,
we care.
Of
time.
We have
care,
not said his name.
We care a lot about him.
Oh, shit.
But no one heard it. It's fine.
We care a lot about him.
We do. So, well, maybe he could call
hey,
in
you know,
and explain
what
it.
He
right
was,
now.
What he should take away from this is that we care about you so much, Chris, that we want to make sure it's the right call for you. You've been through enough ups and downs in relationships, and we want to make sure you find the right man.
Okay, see, that looks desperate. Stop that.
Well,
I mean, you've been you're in your 30s.
You've been dumped so
oh
many
my
times.
God.
You're not getting any older, and according to you, you said you're just getting fatter, so I don't even know.
No.
I'm in my chunky era.
No, I'm in my chunky era. You stole that.
No, what did I say when I walked in?
You're
it's
your
like,
exercise
oh, oh, look, skinny. I said, no, I'm getting fat.
Yeah, I mean, and that I say that because, yes, as Chris walked in, I said, hey, skinny. And he said, actually, I'm kind of fat. And I was like,
see,
oh,
and that's
gosh.
The whole vibe check. Oh, my God.
But no,
no it's not a like,
you failed the our vibe fat. Check. Get out.
You've been vibing with us for 5 years. Get the fuck out of the time.
How do I change the volume on this? Down. Muted mic.
So, don't call it a vibe check. No. You went on a date.
Okay, fine.
Because then what if this is forever then, and you're like, oh, remember our first date?
Well, like, then I pass the vibe check or and is then, the date? No. Like, at our wedding. Oh, good, too much.
Yeah. Now he's like,
can we edit that?
Can we take that one out? Not that I was planning that. Oh, my God.
Definitely. Whatever, I saw your book cover. It was like, Chris Mr. Elvis. Chris,
and it's a blank because you don't know his
You don't know his last name.
Which is another
you
thing
you don't
talk
know
about.
My name.
Should you, baby, baby, do you baby. Think he should know his last name?
What happened?
Did you hear
the
that?
Ghost?
I didn't do anything. I just sat here.
What happened? What did the ghost say?
I don't know. I just like stopped. Quiet. Is that still recording?
I felt for a minute we lost power, but all the lights stayed on.
Wait, do you?
I thought I had a stroke. Yes, I hear everyone
you
again.
See everyone?
I
okay, are we still good?
That yeah, was crazy.
That was crazy. Listeners call in.
Wow.
So, do you feel like
this
he should know
not need to
the last name? Do you feel like he should know his last name?
Not if they're just in vibe check status.
Because you know what? You know why I think it is? I just realized.
What?
I'm a stalker. I'm the person.
You just
that
realized
will...
that? We realized that a long time
yeah,
ago.
Yeah, we knew
but
that.
That's
you,
why the...
you stalked us so much you got on this podcast.
I know.
Do you see what you're me. Sitting yeah,
part of my
right
success
now.
Story.
Celebrity.
My success story.
You too could be like me.
You can stalk the people you like so much that they invite you into their homes.
Right. So, you
oh
don't,
God,
so how are you supposed to research him and find out his digital footprint and everything if you don't know his last name?
I could ask him questions.
Oh no, because then he's going to tell you answers that he wants you to hear. If you're stalking him, you're going to see what's all laid bare. He doesn't get control. He's already put it out there.
Yeah, but isn't that what social media is for? Like, you can look up
you
his handles.
Also, yeah,
like,
that's what I'm saying, but you don't know his last name.
Yeah, but you
I
don't need
his
last
handles.
Name. Yeah, you do know his handles. Like,
no,
Instagram.
I just have his phone number.
See? He knows no.
How do you not, like, hey, what's your IG? Isn't that a thing where you...
Well, I haven't passed a vibe check, so I don't know.
You don't
Maybe
get his. You don't get
step.
To know his Instagram?
I don't want to just, like, have a bunch of followers of men that ghost me after a day.
What, you can't
date
you know, block them, vibe check you.
You could
no, I have a ton of people who watch my Instagram stories, and I think it's very funny.
You could unfollow them, but it's like one
no,
of those.
No, I don't
things
follow
like,
them. They follow me.
I don't. I, yeah,
so
I
they,
guess
they like they want to see what they missed out on.
Oh, absolutely, and then I show them all the time what they missed out on.
Oh. That's it with the green.
Because I'm a
me.
Hot slut.
I'm having fun. Look at my memes.
look at these vibes.
Look
I'm
at
sharing.
My memes of terrible mental health.
See, I just feel this is very weird. No,
he's
you don't
shady.
Know anything about him. So,
what do you mean? I don't know. I know a lot about him.
Oh, yeah, what do you know?
You know,
I'm not going to say it on a podcast.
Come on,
do you know? Do you know three things that are not on the profile?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh.
Well, what are
we got the know. Judgmental painted pinky.
I know.
That's a lot of peas.
I know. I do. That's alliteration.
Alliteration. Whoa, that was a lesson.
You're alliteration.
Well, speaking of illiterate people, some people in Texas, not all.
Not from New Braunfels.
Not from New Braunfels. Not Elvis, but maybe some of his neighbors or whatever. You know, SB 12, Texas Senate Bill 12, was a largely viewed as a
anti-drag bill.
Anti-drag bill. And the auntie. Hello, auntie.
Hello, auntie.
A federal judge has extended a temporary restraining order, which is blocking that ban on drag shows, which is good. So that's good news. The bill, we've talked about it before, basically defines a sexually oriented performance as one in which someone is naked or in drag, basically, and appeals to their prurient interest in sex. Yeah. So basically, but it's drag performers, it's business owners, and they can be fined $10,000 for hosting drag shows. A small business that you want to, it's fine. $10,000.
Our sweet little gay bars.
Yeah. And not even gay bars. Like how many like straight bars and breweries like have
breweries.
Breweries have Elvis goes to breweries.
Exactly.
They go, so you're these small businesses that are just trying to start and do good and provide entertaining time to their customers are
$10,000 for every instance,
yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. And so class A misdemeanor as well, and punishable by up to a year in jail. We want to throw people in jail for basically putting clowns on display.
But drag queens are literally fucking clowns.
Yes.
They are painted more than your normal rodeo clowns. Well, you mind your business.
I love that. So, I thought that was actually funny.
Okay.
That was actually a real laugh.
Oh, the vibe.
Oh my god, vibe checking. I like the rodeo. So, like these drag queens are literally putting on tons of makeup for dollar bills. Like, they are not making much money. They're not here to...
they're too busy.
Well, you know, yes. Well, the lieutenant governor, good old Dan Patrick of Texas, says he supports this anti-drag legislation. Says it is just shocking to me that any parent would allow their young child to be sexualized by drag shows. Children who cannot make decisions on their own must be protected from these sexually oriented drag shows now occurring more and more in front of them.
So what about places like child pageants, straight people literally like making out on each other in the streets,
but also
Hooters.
These things are happening at bars. Like, I mean, why didn't you just say, hey,
yeah,
don't take your kids to bars.
Yeah.
Or breweries. Like, I mean, those aren't, I mean, not... No judgment if you want to take your kid to a brewery, because during the day I think that vibes might be okay. Mm-hmm. Like, it's,
yeah, because a lot of them seem very family.
But
during the
like day. That's you.
That's not when these
like,
things are occurring.
Why would you take them to an alcohol oriented, you know, thing? Like, if you want them to not be exposed to, there's going to be drunk people mm-hmm. at a brewery or at a bar that are going to be belligerent. Judge them on that, not the clowns that perform.
Also, the drag queens during daytime drag when children are awake are not doing any sort of sexual performances. No, well, first of all, most drag queens are not doing sexual performances. But there are some that do show some titties sometimes. You know where they're doing those? They're doing those at bars where they're 21 and up.
Late. That's not your 9 o'clock
show. This is not just like, hey, or your 2 p.m. show. This is like middle of the midnight, fucking night when your child should be asleep to begin with. So if you're taking a child to one of those shows, why, first of all? Second of all, how did you get that child into the bar? Did you smuggle them into a fucking backpack? That seems illegal. And then third of all...
Wow, we're having fun today. Hey, everybody.
It's the ghost. Tonight. The ghost of Cher's Christmas Past.
Do you think she's going to do that? I feel
I
like...
absolutely think she is.
Well, if she listens, which she should...
No, she should listen.
She should steal that.
Did you? No, I'm not going to ask that.
Pee on the floor?
No, I'm not even. Anyways, I had a whole situation. Oh,
sneaky children in a bag.
Yes, like 95% of drag shows do not have children in bags. I'm sorry.
The other 10% sag children everywhere.
Which is even better because you said 95 and he said 10.
19. Did you say
95? You teach math.
But not percentages.
I said 95.
It's good.
It's good stuff.
We do our research here.
Most shows do not happen in bars, in any place that is not 21 and up. So these are not places that drag shows are even being exposed to children to begin with. Plus, most drag queens don't like children. They don't want to be around your kids. They hate children. That's the reason why they are performing at bars with 21 and up people.
Because it's not something that's geared toward that audience. I mean, it's not like...
That's not what drag queens want to do. They're here to entertain gay people.
And even the ones that are around kids that are doing drag story hour, they're not dressed with their titties out. They're dressed very conservatively.
Like, hey, let me go read this book with just tits out. Like, fake tits, right? Mind you, mostly. Most of the time. Mostly.
Mostly. Most of the time. In positive news, jeez, go to California, at least for LGBTQ plus positivity. Transgender History Month is being recognized as a month in August. We'll start in 2024. They're the first state to make such a declaration. The thoughts are, despite the national recognition of LGBTQ plus History Month, which was founded by Rodney Wilson, friend of the show, the bill reads, there is no proper representation and emphasis on the imperative leadership of transgender individuals in the fight for LGBTQ rights throughout history, and the transgender community substantially trails behind the level of inclusion and acceptance afforded to the broader LGBT community. So
I think that's great. Hopefully it'll bring, like we've talked about on here a lot, like bring to light just how influential and, you know, like behind the scenes and how, you know, at the forefront trans people have always been. And like people be like, oh, that's where that comes from. Oh, so that's where that comes from.
You just made a key point with your wording there that's very important that I want to like bring out is you said like in the background, but also like at the forefront.
Yeah.
Like so many people have put trans people like on the back burner. That's like, well, let's focus on gay rights.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know who's focused on gay rights? The people who are the forefront.
Yeah.
The ones that are pushing for all this are the trans people who are causing all of this mm-hmm. for all of y'all little bitches who are not actually fighting for your rights. They're fighting for your rights. They're getting shit done. They are the people who are pushing forward in our gay history. And you're just sitting here being like, oh, I don't like trans people. Like,
yeah.
You can't be a gay and be anti-trans. You cannot be transphobic because it does not work that way. The people who got you your rights.
Oh, hello.
Your rights were Elvis? Trans well, they people.
Do love a good white
party. Like,
so
it's good white party. Everyone likes that. and for anyone who's listening that doesn't understand that is not a racial thing. That is a
Chris's birthday. A white party, get it? Like, because his name is.
And all his friends are white.
Oh my God. No,
you're sitting right here, you little bitch.
The vibe check is Latino.
Heteronormative.
Oh my God, I'm being red for filled.
I thought it was.
Wait, hold on. I can't say red for filled. That'll trigger Dusty.
It wasn't a trigger. I did honestly believe it was, but it should be.
Anyways, trans people. So
yes.
No, I think it's very important. So I agree with you absolutely wholeheartedly. Yeah. I really hope that it. Helps remind a lot of people and really teach a lot of people that trans people have been the forefront of everything.
Well, and when you look
even
back,
though we put them behind the scenes.
Some of those stories are a lot more accepting way back when than we are even now.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you look at some of the names of people, like, that I'm sure they'll celebrate. Like, some of those people were a lot more accepted, a lot more celebrated.
In the 60s,
in their time when they were
before then.
And it's just that they have been pushed back again, forgotten, purposely
erased.
Yeah, so I think it's great.
It's good.
What month is it?
It's in August.
Yeah, August, the entire month?
The entire month of August.
That's good.
Hence the transgender history month.
A hot month.
Okay, hold on.
Why can't we have a good gay February?
Start with me because I.
Or
like,
March. Or.
The
January.
Reason why I asked that is not like what month, because I mean Spanish Heritage Month started today. Hispanic Heritage Month started today, but it's from September 15th until
mid-October because it starts with the Independence Days of many.
I know.
Okay.
No, I understand, but like it's two different months. That's why I asked the question that I asked.
But
I
it's
promise
a
it wasn't just
month long is what it is. Yes, I see what you're saying.
But it's in two different months.
But it is technically a month in the terms of X
Someone
amount of days and weeks.
According to the lunar calendar.
Oh my God. Okay, anyways.
August. Why gotta be hot? I mean,
it's hot.
That's insane. But it's, I mean, right now, we should all celebrate it. It's a good, but it started in California, San Francisco particularly. It's great weather all year round.
Maybe they like their August better than we do.
Yeah.
But it's not necessarily, much like LGBTQ plus History Month in October, it's not about
That's
like
a good time for
marches. Me. It's about like, hey, let's the parties for June. That's October and August are like
for also parties.
Like, we'll party. But to like study and learn. And do we need to go back and listen to the 100th episode of Rodney Wilson's talking to us about?
No, but listenership.
And here we enter that.
Pause for interview this. With Rodney Wilson. Well, Rodney, always good to hear from you. Thank you so much. This is a star-studded podcast. Star-studded podcast. Other gay stuff, red, white, and royal blue. I can't open social media, gay social media, I guess, because like Facebook, my personal Facebook,
gay Twitter
is is all, you know, everyone's going back to school. But, like, you open up the LTAGS account, and it's, like,
gay stuff.
And it's all like red, white, and royal blue. It's, like, all on the X, formerly known as Twitter, all on the IG, all on the Facebook. So what is this about? Because I didn't read the book.
I read the book.
And I didn't watch the movie.
I watched the movie.
So let's start with the book.
That's which came first, chicken or the egg?
We're talking about a book and a movie.
I know. So the premise is you've got the gay son of the first female president of the United States.
Bisexual,
okay.
I'm sorry. Don't erase us.
Not by erasure.
It's been a while.
Since
I read the book, I mean.
I know, right? I was fixing to start singing the song, too.
And then you've got the gay grandson of the Queen of England.
King.
And they are... What? I'm giving you a quick... I'm pretty sure I've talked about this.
Okay.
And they have to make nice and play nice and do, like, international relations because they're known to be enemies. Because it's just...
But no one knows he's bisexual. No one knows he's gay.
Exactly. Because even though they're in, like, this idyllic world, it's still not looked upon.
They, like, met at this, like, political, like, engagement.
And then they just kind of become enemies.
But at first they didn't like each other, right?
They hated each other.
They didn't pass the vibe check.
The
whole thing is very gay. Like, they become, like, sworn enemies and, like, you know, because...
And then they get in a fight.
And then they have to be put together and, like, make appearances to make nice so they don't...
Because they got in a fight and it became an international disturbance. Yeah.
Ooh.
So they have to play nice. They have to be seen being friends. And then they, of course, end up being friends. And then they end up being lovers.
Oh.
They end up being friends and messaging each other constantly.
And it does start as kind of friends. Because they both live life in, like, the political shadow sphere of their
living in the shadow family.
And they don't necessarily like it. So that puts them on a stage. And then so they commiserate with each other. And then they...
Lots of texts with LOLs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and lots of hearts. Vibe checks.
Lots of emojis.
And then they end up fucking everywhere.
Oh, really?
Yeah, in the palace.
Mm-hmm. Because what they kiss,
the White House?
There's a lot of spoilers here.
Well, I mean,
hello. You're watching a game. Like, you know the premise going into it.
It was very good. I think the reason the book did so well is because it's one of those, like, it's great to read books about, like, the AIDS crisis and all those things, like, the stress. But it wasn't a book about, here's two guys struggling. It was a book about, hey, here's these two high-profile people that clearly is not real. It's, like, an idea. And look, they just happened to be in this quirky, funny, really steamy at times rom-com book.
I think the movie did a good job with that aspect, that it was a cheesy rom-com. Like, that's exactly how it
and that's
came
exactly
off.
but it knew I never felt like it was trying to be, like, you know, some kind of, like, you know, like, huge, like, Anna Karenina.
It
was meant to be a feel-good, enjoyable book, and it was. It did. It passed that.
And I think the movie did a good. I just think the movie was a little long for, like, a cheesy rom com. It was, like, over 2 hours. I'm like, can we bring this down?
No, rom coms, like, 90 minutes.
It was, yeah. I was like, you should be aiming for 90 minutes. So, like, 30 minutes could have been cut out of that movie. Long. It was like, I think it was like 2 hours and 10 minutes. Like, ooh. Stop. Like, mm-hmm.
With no commercials too.
Exactly. I was like, stop. But no, it was still a good movie. Like I said, it was very cheesy. There's a lot of, like, I mean, it's very predictable.
I have heard that the acting is one of the criticisms is that it is very low bar on the streaming services.
Yeah,
it's
not the best, but it has Uma Thurman in it. She's present.
I love Uma Thurman.
She was there, but I think she's probably the worst of the actors. And I was like, what the fuck? She was, like, trying to be this, like, Austinite with a southern accent, and it was not very good. And I was like, what is happening here? Like, are you from New Braunfels? Like,
she's too from New Braunfels.
Well, that's the other thing. He is also the first son, I was trying to think, is, I think he's biracial as well.
Yes, like, he is.
So that's the other thing too. It's very inclusive.
Yeah. And they did a very good job. I mean, it's a cute movie for a gay rom-com.
I think it's popular for the same reason.
I swear to God,
well,
this ghost.
Looking, The what's the guy, Jonathan something or another from Mean Girls that now is like the new spokesperson for being gay? Yeah, Jonathan Bennett.
New spokesperson for being gay.
Oh, because he's everywhere.
You have
everywhere.
To go talk to Jonathan.
He's literally everywhere.
You can't open an app.
Jonathan Van Ness. Who is this?
Bennett.
Jonathan Bennett. Oh yeah, go talk to him, please.
Like the reason, like his movies at Christmas last year was such a big thing because it was that whole like.
Just cheesy.
It's rom-com. Just cheesy. It's just have fun. Why can't gays have their, you know, I'm going to quit my high-powered Manhattan job and go to my family's struggling Christmas tree farm and fall
and
in
then
love.
He made and movies open up, and it
open
happened.
Up a, open up a card shop and live there in the small town.
Their Hallmark
Why can't
movies.
They have that Hallmark moment? And I think that's what this is. It's a very Hallmarky feeling with a lot of stuff.
That's exactly right.
And so I think,
except that I think that was the part where the movie missed, was that like, like, and I know they couldn't just be like, look at this hardcore sex situation, but it was like, the sex was more or less implied in most situations. There was only one part where it was like, yeah, they definitely had sex. All the rest was like, haha, you're shirtless. And then all of a sudden it cut scenes. And it's like, and then they come running out of the barn. And it's like,
a teen demographic.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. But I think that's why those are being so well received, because if you look like Euphoria and those kinds of things, because that's a little bit more dramatic.
That was the AC.
I swear to God.
That was a little bit, that's a bit more dramatic. But like, I think it's people, I think are just, and even like Ally, I think it's a good way for allies too to be like supportive, because they're like, okay, this is
like
cool, I'll
little,
watch this.
Chewing off little bits
this
at a time.
This is enjoyable. Why can't they have this? Oh yeah, this is hilarious. This is funny. And so I think that's why they're so popular, because you don't want to have the like constant drama hardship.
Yeah.
Torture porn.
It's interesting that you say that, because I've been listening to the Just Jack and Will podcast. It's a recap show of Will and Grace. And it's been fun to listen to, because they talk about some of the, like,
yeah,
early days they were kind of going through some of those identity crisis sort of things, because they were like, do we lean into the AIDS crisis? Mm-hmm. Like, what do we lean into the AIDS crisis? One of the first like 5-6 episodes, there was a secret that, you know, Grace thought Will was keeping from her, and what you find out through this podcast is like, they thought they were going to, the writers wanted to say that she thought that he was hiding that he had AIDS, or he was HIV positive. And I was like reflecting on that. This show came out in 1998. Like, that would have been a totally different like arc on the show.
Because it goes generic stereotypical rather than stereotypical gay. It's just like you said, this is the stereotypical Hallmark movie.
Well, and that's why they kind of kept on. They're like, we didn't want to go to...
They wanted a buddy comedy.
Yeah, they're like, this was a sitcom, early days, and we didn't want to get too like heavy. And they're like, even though they're like, it was nothing to... We were past, like, it was the late 90s, so AIDS was... There's still a stigma about it, but it wasn't as like, you know, death sentence. It was still something that they were trying to like, maybe we don't go there. So they kept it very, very, lighthearted, much like Red, White, and Royal Blue. Digestible for the straights.
Exactly. And even for the gays. Like, it was definitely like a, like, here's just like a happy, feel good movie. Like, you get to the end and we didn't have to deal with a tragedy. We didn't have to deal with them not getting to be together. Like, oh, sorry. Like,
but it's Hallmark.
There was a happy ending to everything.
Hello, like, I'm sure there was. That's a Dusty joke. Come on, Dusty, that's you.
Well,
because
now they're talking about,
apparently, in the barn, in the palace, the White House.
Making a sequel, correct?
Oh my God.
Making a sequel, right?
Is it?
I think they're talking about it, but there's not a second book yet. So, I mean,
it's like the Game of Thrones. They finished the...
And he's still writing.
He's still writing whatever they filmed.
They get married and have kids. It's that one. No, that's... You could actually do a couple... I'm always intrigued by, like, how do you evolve this story? So, the next... Mm-hmm. The movie is they get married, and it's, like, the hijinks of, like, oh, my gosh, are we going to... You know, last minute. And then the next, like, fast forward 10 years, they have kids. Okay.
Or one of them becomes king or president.
Oh yeah, they got to do that too. They're royal.
Oh yeah.
I forgot that. You know what? I didn't forget. I'm not gonna forget to thank our friends at the Greater Houston LGBT Chamber of Commerce. Pride is 365 days a year, even though June is behind us and we're looking forward to LGBTQ plus History Month. You can show your pride by supporting LGBTQ plus businesses. Where can you find out about LGBTQ plus businesses? They're Greater Houston LGBT Chamber of Commerce. The Chamber is the organization that champions the LGBTQ and allied business community, and you can find a list of LGBTQ owned businesses and learn more about the Chamber at www.HoustonLGBTChamber.com. Honestly, it is my go-to if I'm like, oh, I need a plumber, or I need an electrician, or I need a lawyer, or I luckily haven't needed a lawyer recently. Well, when I was starting my business, it was like, get a lawyer. But now, as a homeowner, like electrician, plumber, we need to get our AC done, like looked at, because Houston weather is awful. And get a checkup there.
Testing the fuck out of us.
Getting flooring, like all those sorts of things.
Flooring.
Hello, the Greater Houston LGBTQ Chamber of Commerce. Did I send you guys? Because Kendall sent it to me. it was someone saying they were driving in the car and there's the legitimatequois, like it's the
legitimatequois community. Legitimatequois. I have not seen it, but I have heard.
Yes,
I think you've said it.
It's quite funny.
No, I say the LGBT. No, what did I say?
LGBTs.
Yeah.
LGBTs. Yeah.
Los GBTs. There you go.
Los GBTs. Los GBTs. This was the legitimatequois.
In sync again. More?
Bye, bye, bye. Okay, I need to go. Okay. Let me go?
Okay. Go.
Yeah, I was like, whoa.
Your mouth is full of marbles.
I was like, whoa.
You do what you need to do.
Let's talk about Tyler Marie Perry.
I need to go.
Tyler Marie Perry. Actually, that's not his name.
I'm going to lose it. What is with this podcast? Like, you guys are on a different level. I love it.
It works, though,
Tyler Marie podcast.
Tyler Murray's podcast.
I'm gonna punch you.
That was you. I didn't say it. It's a podcast.
What the fuck is happening? Okay. Anyway,
Tyler Perry. So, in full disclosure, so I usually like to try to skip or stick to doing a topic that is. Happened the week that we record, like we released this episode. So we're going to release this episode on today's the 15th, 16th, on the 17th. So we were supposed to record last week and we did not because going back to school, my kiddos brought pink eye and strep throat to the house. And we also had a near COVID scare because we had a birthday party and there was like COVID. So we were like, let's not spread germs. So we called off. But I had already done the research. And honestly, I had done 90% of the research and I was feeling like I did everything I needed to do. But I was, every time, I've said this before, when I do these topics, like I always find, it's always interesting because I go into some topics and I'm like, I start it and I'm like, this isn't going to be interesting. And then I get into it and I'm like, wow, there's a compelling story here. So with Mr. Tyler Perry, I've kind of felt the same thing. I'd like last week I was done. I'm like, this is the first time. Like, I don't know how I'm going to make this
stretch it.
Like, it's not interesting, but like, I don't feel like I'm connecting to Mr. Perry. And then I did a couple of more. I did some more research. I was listening to some interviews, reading some more articles with interviews of him. And I'm like, he has a very compelling story. And maybe, like, you know Tyler Perry's story, and you're like, well, duh. And I've heard all this stuff, but it's just, like, when you read it again and you, like, listen to him talk about his struggles and how he got to this place that he's in, and now a very successful man, and you're like, oh, wow, this guy came a very long way and is very successful. And I'm talking about, admittedly too, when I was like, oh, I'll do Tyler Perry. It's his birthday on September 13th, 1969. I was like, he's gay. And then I did research and I'm like, he is not a gay man. So, but again, there's a lot of nuance to that. And I think that's part of the thing too. And I'm just going to be completely honest, and maybe it's the marbles in my mouth. I just assume like there were a lot of attributes the boxes he checked that I was like, well, that's a gay man. He's just not out yet. Publicly. But as I read his story, there's a little bit of things that I can relate to that I'm like, oh, okay. And like, and there's one thing he says in his interview. He says, you know, this was my story. I'm different. Everyone else is different. Like every case is different. Like every person is different. I was like, oh shit. Yeah, it's so true. So,
I was also going to say, like, I know, like, I don't know anything about his background or where he comes from. So I'm very excited to hear the story, but like his, like throughout the whole conversation with like anti-drag and like anti like trans like conversations, there are a lot like Tyler Perry and like specifically like Madea is like brought up frequently. Frequently, because it's like, okay, like you have no problem with straight people
doing it
and creating cross-dressing and drag and like Robin Williams and doing, you know, Birdcage and what's the one where he becomes the
Mrs. Doubtfire?
The Mrs. Doubtfire. Thank you. Hello. So it's like we have these like famous straight people who get to do this cross dressing essentially, and we have no problem. We celebrate this. White Chicks is also another one that's always brought up. It's like we get to like laud these moments, but in these instances where men are just trying to dress as women for entertainment purposes. Once again, the exact same situation, just on stage for people. It's because it's gay coded. It's bad. Like
I think that's a. I mean that's this is helpful for me because I'm like, well, what am I trying to say? I think when I started like researching Tyler Perry, I was like, well, I'm pretty sure he's gay, not out, and that's like I was coming at it from a, like a not a bitter, but I'm like, girl, just come on. And then I'm like, and then you get to make a lot of money off playing drag, which there's a lot of people that your audience, like people in your sphere, probably support, and I'm like, that's not cool. So I actually started the research with a lot of like, here are all the things anger, that Tyler Perry did wrong, and then I'm like, oh wow, like this is, and I had heard about, it's not to say I was dismissive of all the his backstory, it was just like he's a very successful man. And there's one time where I mentioned Oprah because a lot of the interviews I listened to was him and Oprah, but he's also good friends with Oprah. I think she's his son's godmother. Oprah one time was like oh, I'm normal, and she like there was a like a passing interview, like some B-roll, I guess, where she's going into a building, coming out of a building, and some fans are like, Oprah, Oprah, Oprah. And like, what do I get my mom for Mother's Day? She's like, oh, you can get this. And they're like, how do you get that? Like, that sounds expensive. She's like, it's only $100. Like, it's not that much. And the guy in the audience is like, $100? Like, that's a lot of money. So it's so Tyler Perry kind of is in that sort of sphere. Like, I know he's does good by the community, but anyways, like I said, I had some angst, but I feel like a little bit more open to him. He was born September 13th, 1969, born Emmett Perry. He's a junior. His dad was Emmett Perry Sr. He's a producer, director, actor, playwright, author, songwriter, entrepreneur, philanthropist, 24 feature films under his belt, 20 stage plays, 17 TV shows, and 2 New York Times best-selling books. And 16, that's you.
Oh, that was me saying.
I am so on edge that I was like, what the fuck was that screaming
noise? I didn't know there was episode.
I thought it was like a distant scream. I was like, no, I can't handle this. The ghosts are really coming tonight. I can't deal with this.
So 54, a lot of stuff. Like, that's a lot of accomplishments. His childhood, I think, is to me was I did some more research into this over the last week. Not, I just kept saying today, but it was today. It's very compelling, rather. He was born to a woman named Maxine and his dad, Emmett. He was born and raised in New Orleans. He grew up in poverty and abuse, and that's kind of where I'm like, okay, poverty and abuse, you know, I get it, like, that's a story. And then, but he describes his growing up as a living hell, and then as you read more about it, or learn more about it, then you're like, oh shit, it was a living hell. He endured violent beatings, shouting, name-calling. He describes that when, though, he said when someone was doing something to him, he would often go to this park, he said, where like his mother and aunt took him, but that was in his mind. And he would go to this park until it was over. And the psych brain in me was like, oh my god, that's dissociative disorder, identity disorder. And then I'm not a psychiatrist, but like the psycho nerd in me that does that. But then you can, and I the reason I say that is he projected into, like, he does play all these different personalities in his movies and shows. But anyways, I'm not diagnosing him. I just, like, I thought it was, like I said, interesting psych nerd stuff. But he describes being beaten by his father. One instance, he says he was hit with a vacuum cleaner cord, and his dad wouldn't stop until there were welts on the on his flesh, and he had to wait till his dad went to sleep before he could kind of escape. And then he ran to his aunt's house, and his aunt was like, she was just like, she couldn't believe what happened. She took a gun over to, you know, his dad and said, "Don't ever do that again." And talked to his mom and told his mom, "You never leave that boy alone with his father." Mm-hmm. He talks about another beating where then he says he was blacked out for 3 days. And this time his father asked him to change the tire. He couldn't loosen the bolts. His mom and his uncle were trying to help him. His father was like, "Oh, well, I'll go and do it." His father couldn't loosen the bolts. And Tyler says he remembers kind of smirking and his dad looking at him when he saw that, because Tyler was like, "Well, you can't do it either. You're calling me all these names, and now you can't do it." His father saw the smirk and then just basically tackled him. And he said he remembers being tackled and held on to the chain link fence until his hands were bloody, and his dad just kept hitting him. He lived in fear of his dad, obviously. I mean, these brutal beatings and just the verbal abuse. He was constantly like fearing that his dad was going to just harm him or do something awful, to the point that he tried to take his life. He slit his wrists. So obviously, again, that abuse was very kind of weighed heavy on him, right? He says now, he's like, "I'm so glad that, you know, that didn't, you know, I wasn't successful, but it was something that was really real weighing on him and real to him at the time." It doesn't get better because he was also sexually molested. He says that at age around 5 or 6, he was molested by an adult male neighbor, also by a male nurse, and a man he knew from church, who sadly used God and the Bible to justify the things that were going on. So he says his first sexual experience was a man performing oral sex on him when he was under the age of 10.
Oh my God.
And it didn't get any better because, it's like he said, his first full sexual experience was with a woman at age 10 who was his mom's friend. No, his friend's mom, rather, not his mom's friend, his friend's mom. So he was playing with his friend. His friend's mom was getting in an argument with her boyfriend. She winds up sending the friend to the shower, says, "Go take a shower," and then she tells Tyler, like, you need to leave. But she locks the door, and then she then and she's dressed in lingerie, and door goes click, and she takes the key to the door and she puts it inside her, and he says, "You need to get the keys." And so he has this sexual experience with this woman. So I mean, like, you think about the brutal physical beatings, the sexual abuse by both men and women, by people that, you know, a neighbor, a person from church, a friend's mom, like people you think you're supposed to trust, mm-hmm. and obviously a huge distrust in adults because of the just awful way they treated him. Yeah. I mean, you hear him now, and like he processes it in a way that's like, this shit happened to me, and it was mm-hmm. awful, but these people were also abused. Like he there's some sort of grace or forgiveness he gives to them because of, he's like, they were probably in the same situation, but they didn't, you know, they didn't go my path. They went down their path. Right. And, he did say though that, like, the saving grace for him, you know, while his aunt would take a gun to his dad, his mom would never do that. And his mom though was his saving grace. Like he just adored her and wanted to make her happy. And that brought him joy. But his mom was beaten by his father as well. He describes one instance where they tried to escape. They took their Cadillac, were trying to get to California. His father reported it stolen, and then she was arrested. His mom was arrested. So the dad and uncle come to get them and return to Louisiana, and he says his dad beat his mom the whole way back home. But he says despite all of that, like, his mom was just like the most, she was very passive but just was so compassionate. He says like a wounded bird, like he would, yeah, she would stop and try to rescue and take care of. But and he talks about one instance, but he just describes like she went to church. That was her, how she found joy and hope. He said he'd see her cry at home, like when she was being beaten or after she was being beaten, and that was one sort of like type of tear. But when she was at church, she would also cry, but it was a different sort of tear and a joy. And he wanted to know that joy. He's like, if that's something that can make her happy, like I want to know what that joy is. So he really started to get involved or interested in the church so that he could feel that same way. And yeah, so I mean that whole childhood experience really kind of informs his motivation and in some instances the content for the plays and movies that, yeah, he would go on to write. Not so much the abuse, but mm-hmm, the caricatures of the people. And like you think about people that are doing that, and you don't, I'm not trying to humanize abusive people, but like there's just so much going on. And I think part of, for me, like what I was reading and listening to some of that, I did not go through the same horror that he went through. Mm-hmm. I did not have abusive parents. There was abuse in my household. There was abuse in a lot of other households in my family. So I was familiar with that sort of, and I'd witnessed it with like aunts and uncles and cousins and so that sort of stuff. So I could kind of like put myself in the shoes a bit, but not go there deeply in the same instance.
And that's like, I feel like with a lot of the stories we tell on the podcast, we actually can form some sorts of empathy when we talk about like their coming out stories, yeah, and stuff like, yep, that, because we have all gone through that. We, yep, all understand that sort of thing, that we can like literally put ourselves in that shoes. Like, oh, I understand like where that person's coming from.
Right.
This becomes like a point of like outside perspective of sympathy. It was like, we never experienced, yeah, to that degree. You never experienced it. I never experienced it at all. Like, yeah, and like, so we're just like looking at this like a
yeah,
an outside looking like, oh shit. Like,
I mean, I guess the closest, like, I know people in my family that have been treated that way. Not, yeah, now that this, yeah, tiger, and I say like, I don't say, oh well, they're resilient, but it creates different personality types. Some really sad, some really like over the top, and I dare say funny. Like that's their coping mechanism. Yeah. That's how they process humor, it. That, yeah, they're like I said, some folks are really sad, some folks are just like over the top hilarious, and you're like, you understand, you're like, what is that motivator? And then you dig into the story one day, and you're like, oh shit, like I didn't, and you know, it's, someone like Kendall said it on the podcast before, you kind of laugh through the pain, mm-hmm, right, so that you don't have to go there. And so I could see where some of that stuff, those characters, some of those experiences translate into a caricature on like as Medea, or you know, some of the family members and that those stories that he tells, and that, and he talks about that as he went on to write, and he did write as a way, like even growing up, as a way to kind of escape things and to just express his thoughts and his feelings. He didn't graduate high school, but again, very, very, you know, into his feelings in terms of how he wrote things. He said that I guess he had a personality that was attractive in the sense that, you know, when people would come over, like, that his family would say, okay, Tyler, stop what you're doing. Like, you need to, you know, basically entertain, like the, you know, because, yeah, he said, you know, people would always tell him, like, oh, you're going to be a preacher when you grow up, because he was well-spoken. And he's like, and that's what you did in New Orleans. If you're a successful, you know, black man, you grew up and you were a preacher, like, or a teacher, and that's what you were going to do. But
teacher or preacher,
teacher or preacher. And so But he kept writing, and then he felt compelled, though. He's like, I'm going to... he knew that he needed to do something different. He often cites, you know, prayer and kind of guiding him the right way, or at least to do certain things. And so he used all his letters to write his first play. He wound up moving to Atlanta, or to Georgia, and to he's like, I'm going to make something. I'm going to do this. And he's like, he was so... compelled by what he saw in Atlanta, because he saw a bunch of like success. There's a very successful and thriving black community, and he's like, I saw that. He's like, I was like, wow, there are successful black businessmen, professors, families going out to dinner. He's like, my family never went out to out to a restaurant to dinner. He's like, so I saw this. He's like, yeah. I was just intrigued. He's like, so I was gonna go all in, pretty much. And so he's like, all my rent money, my car payment, like I wanted to be successful. Like I wanted to do something, and he's like, I knew I could do something with this art that I had. So he put a lot of money, like in rent money, car payments, and into his first play that he wrote. I know I've been changed in 1992. He was like, I'm going to open this. There are going to be hundreds of people that are going to show up to this premiere. And he was like, it was empty seats. He was like expecting hundreds. There were like 20, 30 people that showed up. So he's like, I lost money. He's like, but I prayed about it, and I felt, you know, like I was getting direction. Like, don't quit. Like, quit giving yourself like a hard time. Like, you've got this gift. Go forward. He says 6 years later, he you know, there was another run, a local run, and it was actually, you know, line wrapped around the building. And so he's like, I just had to, he's like, it was 7 long years of just persisting, writing plays and trying, and, you know, hustling, because he'd have a day job and then, you know, try to make money to support his play. And that's what he did. And then over 13 years, he wrote 13 different plays, and got to this point where there was a character named Medea, who was this God-fearing, gun-toting grandma, who I think everyone knows. Yeah. Like, I mean, that's, I think, probably the most prominent character with which people...
Early 2000s, mid-2010s, Medea was everywhere.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Everyone knows Medea.
Yeah.
Like, everyone.
So she first premiered in his play, I Can Do Bad All By Myself, and then I think the big first feature film, early 2000s, 2005, Diary of a Mad Black Woman. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, the rest is history.
I remember when that came out.
He had then, the next year, 2006, he published a book, Don't Make a Black Woman Take Off Her Earrings, Medea's Uninhibited Commentaries on Life and Love, which that was a New York Times bestseller. And then he had a kind of deviated a little bit, House of Pain on TBS, which was a TV show. It was the highest rated first run syndicated cable show. That was picked up by TBS. The interesting thing about that is I heard him saying, like, he was getting a lot of pressure. He was trying to shop around a show, and then he was like, I don't want to, he was like, well, how do you get on a show? He was getting a lot of pressure because he's a black man, right? And on Hollywood, trying to sell a TV show. And they're like, yeah, I don't know. You're trying to sell to, you know, church going black people. And, you know, that's not a target audience. Like that's not a demographic. He's like, no, trust me. So what he did is he's like, I don't want to just make one pilot, which was this kind of the common way to get a TV show successful. He's like, I'm going to make 10 shows. So he made 10 shows. And a lot of people were asking, like, dude, why are you doing that? Because essentially you're wasting money, right? If you don't, like, the pilot is like, it's the vibe check.
Oh, boy. Hold on.
Oh, boy. Yeah. And then you make, and then they buy the other ones. But he made 10, and he said it worked out in his favor because at the time he said UPN and CW were splitting up or joining together. Yeah. And so they were looking for content. And he's like, all everyone had was a pilot. And so he's like, I had 10 shows and the books already, so I was able to do that. And then, like, the CBS one, like, or the TBS one, the House of Pain, he was like, in syndication, he's like, he's like, how do you get syndicated? They're like, well, you know, it's after 100 shows, then we can start talking about syndication. So he's like, well, I'm going to go make 100 shows. And so he was able to sell that. So he what he says is, like, you know, you get told no, and he's like, at some point you accept, and I don't like the phrase, it is what it is, but he's like, you accept it is what it is, and then you either deal with that, or you do something about it, right? You make your, you know, a new reality. And so that's what he did. So the next year he did Meet the Browns. It was just second highest debut on cable after The House of Pains. He also had a network show on the OWN network, Love Thy Neighbor, and a drama, The Haves and Have Nots, in 2013. So constantly working. He's done acting as well. He's been in Gone Girl, if you remember that. He was in the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles in the later 2010s. He's an entrepreneur. He started Tyler Perry Studios, landed this 300-acre acquisition in Georgia. Fort McPherson was kind of what it was, and he's basically, again, turned it into a movie studio, right? A movie lot. There's been 15 films, 800 episodes of his TV series that have been filmed there. Wow. He employs 400 people in his production company, has real estate investments all over the place. He's a philanthropist. He sponsored 65 children to go to Walt Disney World at one point. Very supportive of the Black community in Atlanta. Lots of awards. Yeah. To his name. A movie, Why Did I Get Married, debuted at number one. I mean, again, he's got a niche in terms of like a Black church going audience. Yeah. His movies play and shows play on the themes of morality, innocence, conflict, temptation, and it's as a message of family and togetherness, and speaks to the Black experience. I think, you know, on a kind of an aside, like, there was some commentary about, like, why does the LGBTQ community not like his work or like his work? And, like, part of it is camp. It's very campy. Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot of people in our LGBTQ community that are, like, think it's, it, like, are attracted to that camp sort of genre, right? So he does have a following in that, in our community. But at the same time, he gets a lot of pushback because he is teaching morality to a church-going audience. Some of the, at least early days, some of the themes were, like, gay people were, if it was brought up at all, it was the brunt of the joke, or it was trying to, like, make a point, like, see what happens. Like, there's one article that references Janet Jackson when she was in one of his movies. She was playing the wife and her husband. They were getting a divorce, and apparently they were the husband. Janet Jackson had the financial upper hand, and so the husband was like, "Oh, I want my half of this." And so they were basically trying to make them, my words, the bitch of the relationship, the woman. And so she's like, "All right, if you want to be a bitch, here you go. Here's your bitch." And so in that scene, Janet Jackson there's a cake, this enormous birthday cake, but instead of a stripper coming out, it's a flamboyant gay man that's dressed in a miniskirt. So it's basically like, you're a bitch, you're gay, I'm the one making the money, and what are you doing? You're not making that money.
You're a little gay man, essentially.
Because you can't make the money, you're gay. You're letting a woman. So the point is, like, you know, it wasn't uplifting of the gay community. It was kind of, and there was a similar thing in terms of, like, HIV. There was a movie, Temptation. This couple's having an affair. A bunch of affairs are happening, and it's like, part of the theme is like, see what happens when you have affairs, you get HIV. And it was just kind of like, it was very, again, not an uplifting story, the support of the LGBTQ plus community. Nonetheless, he maintains, you know, he's an ally. And I think there's been, again, a camp in his movies, or attracted to the camp in his movies. A show, Meet the Parents, there's a gay character, Gloria, a woman who's in a committed relationship. So, you know, the point is, it's not even a subplot. It's not that she's, oh my gosh, she's a lesbian. It's just kind of like, oh, she's lesbian. She's just a lesbian. Yeah. So, Madea, you know, he says Madea's an ally. She thinks very much. And recently there's a Madea movie that was released in the last few years. Had a great grandson, and, you know, Madea was very accepting of that. You know, to your point earlier, in terms of Madea gets to be in drag and there's all this backlash. They're like, well, do you describe it as drag? I mean, how do you feel Madea character and your portrayal of Madea falls on the drag spectrum? Is it like like from Flip Wilson to RuPaul was the question that was posed to and he says, for me, I just, you know, I basically, it's a costume where I'm becoming a character and as an actor, and I just embody the character fully, whatever that means. If people want to think it's drag or call it drag, I don't care. It doesn't matter to me. It is what it is. I'm just fully embodying the character as what they are.
And that's what a drag queen does. A drag queen creates a character. That's why we have persona. Stage names, yeah. A persona. My persona as Dixie is a completely different person than Chris. And Dixie acts and says different stuff than Chris normally would. Because it's like, you're an actor. Like, you're a whole different persona.
Yep.
Like, that's what all of these movies are. Whether or not, like, whatever makeup you put.
And you say, it's just the way you said actor was
fine. Actor.
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 From New Braunfels.
New Braunfels from an actor. New Braunfels is only like 10 minutes up the road from Shirts.
Hello. Way. Up the anyway, what?
Up the what? Oh. Up the Shirts from Rhodes? What?
Up to Shirts. Oh, high school.
Oh. That was the best. Anyways. It was
consensual.
Okay. It was consensual. Anyways, so, who was I yelling at? I was talking.
You were talking about.
What was I talking? Was I talking?
Going up things.
Oh.
Yes.
Going drag. Up the road. Drag. Yes. So, no, I got nothing. You guys get right. All right.
Perry. Tyler Perry. Sexuality.
I thought he was gay.
I think this was interesting. Before I was like, okay, he says he's straight. No, I think he's gay, but whatever. But now I, like you said, as I read his take on his sexuality, I do think I can relate to it. I don't know what the right word is. Like, I understand it a bit. He says he knew Madea? Madea. Hello, just call me Madea. He liked girls in the neighborhood when he growing up, but he describes what he when he talks about like the molestation, he often says like his body betrayed him because he whether it was with him with the man or the his friend's mom, he's like, I got an erection, and so he says like, I was confused because again I knew I liked girls, but when this man was doing this to me, like I was aroused. He said he got an erection, so I'll clarify. I used the word versus saying aroused because those are two different things.
Yeah.
He said it took all of his 20s to figure out what his abuser had given to him to carry inside his heterosexuality that did not belong to him. And the way he describes some of this stuff, though, it does feel a bit religious. Like, I'm going to, like, there's these demons. Yeah. And like, but his words, again, took all of his 20s to figure out what his abuser had given to him to carry inside his heterosexuality. But I can relate to that because, I've talked about this before, the things that happened in my childhood that like that I'm like, oh shit, is this why I'm having these feelings, because I had this experience when I was a kid, and or is it because I'm actually attracted to a man? So like all the time guilt, especially growing up Catholic, because you're like, oh, you know, you can't do these things, like you're, and so I mean, I'd go to confession and I would confess to having experience with men. And I'm like, but it's not because I'm gay. It's because I would always track it back to when I was a kid. And so as he articulated that, I was like, oh shit, like, is that how I mean, I'm past all of that now, but I know that struggle. And so, but the thing is, he says he speaks about it as he believes lots of men don't, He wants to talk about it. He brought it to attention, and not till after his mom died, because he didn't want to talk about any of the abuse, because he didn't want to put his mom through more pain. Because she knew all that abuse happened to him, at least the physical abuse from his dad, but didn't know about the sexual abuse. Yeah. So he's like, I didn't want to put her through all that, especially because he was, you know, high profile, and you know, she would get lots of questions. So she passed in 2009, and that's when he started talking about it. But he's like, I need to talk about this because lots of men have been through this experience and they don't talk about it. But every man is different. Like, and he's like, he believes he's a heterosexual. Mm-hmm. Other people, again, myself, would be like, okay, I'm bisexual, and this is, now I'm married to a man, right? So it is, again, everyone's different, but I did find that to be interesting. He says that he does have triggering moments from the abuse. He's like, when women, there was an instance where a woman was wearing lingerie, and he, you know, his words, he said he couldn't perform. Another instance where a woman was locking the door, heard the click, 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 and he was like, that was a triggering moment for him as well. So he says people have been abused. There's a string to the puppet master, and they're holding you hostage to your behaviors and what you do. At some point, you have to be responsible for them. Says he decided to untie the strings and chase them down to where they came from. He was able to free himself, even though these things happened to him. It was not me, which I think is an interesting take. It doesn't. I mean, I do. It's again, it's a bit dissociative, I think, when he says like they happened to me, but it's not me.
Yeah.
Like it's like you kind of taking yourself out of that. Which I, you know, if that's how his coping mechanism works, then I'm sure he's gotten lots of therapy to to work through that. Just a kind of a side note, like his father, he took a paternity test. His brother, our dog Coco, don't have the same dad. So he assumes that, and he kept asking his mom, like, is this my dad? And she's like, son, that's your father. Today he still supports his father. He's forgiven his father, but doesn't have a relationship with him. He's paid for his dad to live in a mansion and provides him a check every month. At one point, though, when he started talking about the abuse more, his father kind of chimed in through Tyler's brother, and said he doesn't have any remorse about beating Tyler. He said, if I had beat your ass one more time, you probably would have been Barack Obama.
Oh.
Yeah. So, that's pretty
fucked up.
Yeah, fucked up. Again, I found this story to be more compelling. I think his experiences, I guess it's hard for me to be like, oh, like if I would have, we recorded this, I'm glad we recorded it this week versus last week, because I would have been like, and he's a homo.
Yeah.
But knowing his experience now and in that detail as he laid it out, which is very brave of him, I'm like, whoa, well, this is a very nuanced story. But I'm like, he wanted to be close to his mother and did want to be an architect growing up. So I'm like, those are, which Kendall always said he always told people he wanted to be an architect because that was a straight way of saying he wanted to be a interior designer.
Exactly.
Gay.
Just gay. Gay.
But Tyler Perry, there you go. We'd like to thank our sponsor, Economy Works. You need help with marketing? Hire a freelancer. Need help building a website? Hire a freelancer. You need help with benchmarking analysis? Hire a freelancer. Economy Works believes in the power of connection and wants to connect you with its talent network. The talent network is over 1,000 years of experience and growing in HR, marketing, IT, accounting, and the other specialties. Economy Works. When we work, the economy works. You can find out more at economyworks.com. That's economyworks.com. All right, Chris.
All they're going to hear is exactly.
Ethel Cain.
Ethel Cain. Oh, okay. So actually, very similar story. Not similar story. Similar. It's actually different. Not similar.
She's at all. A white woman.
No, I meant. What I meant.
They both
was,
went to church.
I researched it last week, and I was like, okay. I researched it last week, and I was like, okay, you are complaining a little bit too much. And then I'm like, okay, I guess I like see like some aspects of what you're talking about. So let me dive in. Mm-hmm. So Ethel Cain,
I'm complaining too much?
No.
What did I complain
about? Them. They, like, I feel like she was complaining a little bit too much about some things, and I'll dive into it. So Ethel Cain, see, okay. With my research with her, there is a name that is thrown here, and I don't know if it is a dead name, because it is used in a lot of different articles. And from what I understand, Ethel Cain is a persona.
Yeah.
So the name Hayden Silas Anahedonia.
Anadonia.
There you go. Sorry. Is their name?
Wait, is Ethel Cain? a Tron performer? Oh, Tron. Okay. Like you said, you said a identity. That's what Tron. I said.
Well, it's very yes,
it's very queer coded. So they were born. She was born on March 24th of 1998. Okay. But she, yeah, exactly. I was like, even younger than me. Ethel, like
you
but.
Were, you weren't graduated from high school in 1998.
No, I was six at that point. Six. No, I was five. Five. 5 years old. You were in college.
Wait, what month? September?
March.
Not
March
yet.
March of 98.
Oh, you were in high school. Okay.
Yeah. That was my junior year.
I was going up the top.
I was in kindergarten. No, I was not. Yes, I was in kindergarten. Anyways, so she was raised in Perry, Florida. She was the oldest of four children and a Southern Baptist family. Oh. Welcome to Elvis. Her father was a deacon, and she was involved in the church church choir from a young age. At the age of eight, Kane began studying classical piano. She also did influences from Karen Carpenter, the Steve Miller Band, and a variety of Christian music. She was homeschooled her entire life. As a teenager, she dived into the devil's music, pop music. She found pop music, particularly Florence and the Machine, which I think is so funny because I found Florence and the Machine in college, and that was probably around the time that she found them, which I think is hilarious. So she came out as gay to her family at the age of 12 and left the church at the age of 16. And on her 20th birthday, she was like, actually,
wait a second.
Gay. Not a gay man. I am actually a trans woman. So reflecting on this, she recalls like never made it clear to everyone that I am was not like other people. I'm sorry, it was made clear to everyone that I was not like other people. I should probably read a quote that's actually like, you know, a quote and not just like made up. Whenever I wanted to develop, I started to come into my own as a trans woman. We were a house divided, aka it was me versus my whole town. So she really found her inspirations from gospel music, country music, classic rock, and alternative music. In 2017, she considered enrolling in the Florida State University Film School, but she began experimenting and creating reverb, heavy choral-inspired music on GarageBand, which was a thing that was happening. In 2017 and 2018, she released her works to small groups of friends and started putting them on Twitter and Tumblr and Instagram under the name White Silas and Atlas. She has a lot of little monikers that she uses. In 2019, she began... following the release of her debut single as Ethel Kane, it was titled Bruises. She connected with an artist, Nicole Dollinganger, through... It's a whole... Dollinganger, yes. I said it right.
What's the name of the...
Through social media, opening for Dollinganger on the artist's Heart-Shaped Bed Tour in Chicago.
Hello.
So she really started with like...
Can you imagine making those sheets?
Yeah, for real. Cutting that shit out is too much. in September 2019, she released a small collection of songs titled Carpet Bed, her first play under the Kane moniker. In December of 19, she... after the release of her Golden Age EP, she was backed by an artist named Wicca Faze Springs Eternal, who praised Kane for her mature songwriting and understanding of melody. So, let me scroll forward of things that I have here. She got to a point... Oh, no, that's further down. Much further down. Okay, never mind. Not there. So, then she started, like, headline for these different shows... For these, like, kind of underground artists. And, like, soon ended up signing with a production company, essentially. And so in August of 2020, she moved from Florida into a refurbished church outside of Richmond, Indiana. Ooh. Where she would then finish her first actual EP with her first record label. So in February of 2021, she released her first single... titled Michelle Pfeiffer. The song was premiered on Paper and Pitchfork and Billboard and Nylon, and The Fader. So she's like dabbling in certain things. And the second single titled Crush came in March as well, with a third one titled Punishable. And so we just got like some different things. So fast forwarding, she released another single in 2022 from a new album called Preacher's Daughter, which was released in May of 2022. Mm-hmm. She went on to release singles Strangers and American Teenager in the same year, with music videos showing up as well. The album was released via her own label. So she created her own label, which featured 13 songs called Daughters of Cain. In support of the album, Cain embarked on the Freezer Bride tour in 2022 and the Bloodstained Blonde tour in 2023. She started modeling for Givenchy, Miu Miu, and
Givenchy.
And Miu Miu and Marc Jacobs. And then even debuted the New York Fashion Week runway for Eklaus Lotta. And she performed the 22nd Coachella. She performed at Coachella, the 22nd Coachella, last year in 2023. This year, 2023. Sorry, because Coachella, next Coachella.
2023.
Yeah, exactly. So, coming to the point that I really, like, kind of invested in, was this year in June, she performed on stage at the Sydney Opera House. In Sydney, part of Vivid Live, resulting in the show
you've being... You've been to Australia?
I've been to Australia.
Was that before or after you went to Africa?
I went to Africa, but I didn't work out there. Okay. I did do a lot of hiking, if that counts
as Australia? Workout.
Yeah, of course it did.
You know, is it hiking if you're just like, is it... I always feel like, is it hiking... Do they have mountains in Australia?
Hey, I hike to the mailbox every day.
Yeah. Well, that's what I always like.
Is yes, I hike the Blue Mountains.
They have mountains in Australia.
Yes.
Shut up. Do they really?
Do you think it's just a flat kind of...
Well, I thought it was more flat-ish. I didn't realize there was...
Continent?
Oh, I was like, I don't know.
I
don't know what you said.
I don't know what I said.
So they have mountains. I was under the impression Australia was more... I'm from Texas, so we learn about Texas, and that's it. You're lucky Australia is a continent.
Honestly, I am impressed that I know Australia exists.
Works.
Work.
But, like, I thought it was more, like, deserty, plainsy, like, with, like, those butte things.
Do you know what causes deserts?
Hot.
Mountains.
Hot.
Mountains cause desert because they block airflow.
No, are you serious? That's wild.
Yeah, so if you follow jet streams and understand...
Oh, I thought you were going to say, if you follow so-and-so on, you'll learn.
No, I mean, look at the, like, the desert.
The handle is at jet streams.
The desert's on the other side of... the jet stream's coming from the West Coast, so when they come over California and you go over California, you end up in Nevada, that's a desert. Because it's blocking the jet stream.
Wow.
Do you... Well, I
went to school in Texas.
Anyways, so...
And now you're teaching in Texas.
Yeah, now you're teaching in Texas.
And I teach science.
The cycle continues.
And,
so.
And
wow.
95 plus 10.
95 plus 10.
Equals desert.
This is rough. So she fainted while she was there. When she was performing. And so then there was like a whole thing. It's like, whoa, she fainted. Like, this is a huge fucking deal. So there's like a whole conversation that like really happened with her. And she was basically like, y'all suck. Like, she didn't want to be famous.
Hey, don't laugh.
Was that a ghost?
You don't laugh at my husband sneezing. He's very
she
ill.
She essentially, like, didn't want to be, like, super famous. She, like, wanted a little bit of fame.
I
but,
would
like,
be
not
so
too
famous,
much fame.
I can say. I didn't want this.
Oh, and that's where she's at. She's, like, essentially overnight, like, she got this fame. Mm-hmm. And, like, these people started following her on social media. She is a person who is very well-versed on the internet. So she was able to be very witty, very comedic. And people on TikTok and... Twitter and whatever else people use nowadays, they were very excited to like see her and like hear from her because they thought she was so funny. But the problem with that is like with funny and like creating this funny persona, there was never like a moment that she got to like be serious. And so like people wouldn't take her seriously. So when she was at a concert, she was performing at a concert and like she was doing like a really intimate song. And she came up to like a fan, singing to this fan. And this fan was like, I just discovered you 2 weeks ago. And like, I thought you were so funny on TikTok. And like, she was like, it like brought this like huge facade down. It's like, I'm singing this like personal yeah. intimate song to you. And you're just like wanting to laugh at me. Like, because it's just like this comedy that you're feeling from me as opposed to like these like powerful moments of yeah. artistry and like being an artist and being engaged in the songs that I'm singing to you. So then she was like, I am just like being tossed around by these different artists. And she said,
I was all like, these... Oh, sounds good.
I know. I was like, oh, me with the good yeah, time. Exactly. Oh, damn. but like, these artists like flocked to her thinking like, oh, like DMing saying, oh, I want to be your friend. My friend wants to get to you. So then like she felt like she was being used and like her notoriety just like because she exploded so fast. It was like, I don't know who I can trust as a friend and people who are just trying to be my friends to be famous, like to touch on fame. And then like she started getting artists that wanted to work with me and she's like, I'm saying no to most opportunities because, I've been asked to share some stage with some artists, and I've been asked to sing on some songs with some big artists and I just had to say no because I don't want to be up there with them. I really don't. I really do want to reiterate how grateful I am for everyone who's ever said a nice word about my music. But I really think there can be too much of a good thing. There's just some levels of success that I really don't want for myself. She had so many different monikers and like different names mm-hmm. over her life that it was just like, let me just put things out there. She really just like wanted like people to appreciate her art and not be famous. And like now she's here and she's got like 500,000 followers. 500,000? I lost my notes. 300,000 followers. Sorry, it's me. 300,000 followers on Instagram. I don't. He does. He's the one who suggested me researching Ethel Kane. So she's had names. Where did I have them? I had all sorts of different names up here. And I lost them. And then I have more down here. Tommy, Ashmeda, Atlas is one that I said earlier. So she's posted under all sorts of different things as like experimental throwaways and demos because she just wants to like put art out there. Yeah.
These
and
are like her alias?
Alias, yeah. Not monikers. Yeah, aliases. Mm-hmm. When she first came on the scene, she also put out like this music of like 10-minute long songs that never had like. A chorus, like you know the uh-huh. the typical thing where here's a verse, here's a chorus, here's a verse, here's a chorus, here's a bridge, here's a chorus. Like that's a like if you really look at songs that are on the radio and like there is a verse, a chorus, a verse, a chorus, a bridge, a chorus, and like that's normally how every single one of them just kind of like goes. Sometimes they'll like ooh change it up. We're starting with a chorus, like. And that's the biggest change. She just, like, wouldn't ever have, like, a repeating medley at all. It was, like, a 10-minute song of just, like, here's me singing for 10 minutes.
No, I'm familiar with this artist.
With Ethel.
My husband likes
yeah.
to listen to
so,
fabulous.
She does have really great songs. But, like, she like I said earlier, she really took inspiration from Gregorian Chant. Mm-hmm. Which, Gregorian Chant, if you... are a musical person who understands like actual like measure. Gregorian chant doesn't have measure, and that's the whole point of Gregorian chant. Ethel Kane does have measure, so it's not Gregorian chant. Let me just make that clear.
Okay, size queen.
Anyways, but she does take from it that there is no like repetition.
Yeah,
she's just mm-hmm. singing to sing,
it's like a story,
and that's it's a story for 10 minutes. And so, like, that's really, like, where it became popular, because she like divided this music scene essentially, and she's like, I don't want this attention, I don't want this. So that's like really where Ethel Cain stands and where she kind of came from. She has reflected on her like religious upbringing in a recent interview. She really said like she still does consider herself Southern Baptist. So whether I like it or not, God has always had and always will be a huge part of my life. Whether he's being used as a comforting figure or a threat, I've always been surrounded by it. It's not really something that you can just walk away from. And I'd rather just sit with it than be like, fuck the church. The church.
Freudian slip there.
The church. There is no chills in this shelter. A no chill shelter.
But what's the vibe?
I'm vibing.
Bad vibes only. In an interview with Rolling Stone, she revealed that all of her family have since left the church. Oh my God, that's the second time.
They're all turds.
They're all turds.
Oh my goodness. Churchgoers
are now turds.
Yeah. So she also clarified that they are all religious in some amount, some facet. She later elaborated on Tumblr that she does not consider herself as a Christian anymore, nor as someone who cares about religion. However, she still abides by the values that she was raised on.
Tumblr, that was Tumblr. That was
2022. That's after porn. So like, no one's on Tumblr.
That's why I was like, that's like, a choice.
You gotta be like really deep diving Tumblr. You gotta be a hardcore Tumblr.
Like
fan
that.
Like, but yeah. That's like still. Let's say, isn't that like announcing something like on MySpace?
Yes. No one uses Tumblr anymore.
Tumblr is like X is the new Tumblr.
Oh yeah. And Blueski is the
new Twitter. Blue and Sky. So everybody's
you
want
a code? I have one.
Sure.
Okay.
Everybody. Oh yeah.
Everybody. Yeah. You. I'll invite you.
Everybody
him.
Is on. Yeah. Everybody is. X is only there for porn.
Yeah.
No.
Porn, oh, that's all I use.
That's
X
all
for.
There is anymore.
Yeah. Anyway, so she was used to be really active on social media, but she has deleted her Twitter account. And she said, I don't want all my personal business out there because I just thought the internet... innermost thought out there for on the internet for the world to see. So she's like, I'm not. She also noted in another article that I read that she was like, y'all are like going above and beyond and like finding my family and shit. Like... She was like, I didn't want that. Like, why? You guys are fucking weird. Like, these fans are going, like, too intense and going out there and finding her family and, like, finding them and, like, oh, here, like, you're Ethel's family, like, blah, blah, blah. She's like, no. So she's like, I don't want to be on social media anymore. So she's transgender. She's bisexual. And then the article ended by saying she's autistic. So, there's that.
There you go.
So, I just wanted to put that out there. She reached a certain level of fame, and she didn't. She obviously wanted. She wanted someone to recognize her art. She wanted people to recognize her art. She wanted to give her art to people.
To share it.
And then she realized what it meant to be famous. And she was like, my art is not being appreciated. Instead, my art is being, like, demolished. I don't want to use her words. I'm just like...
I could see that because, like, when you... Like, she's very, like... avant-garde, very like anti the, you know, because it's not the mainstream. But because I suggest it, I love it. Thanks to Spencer. That I mean, it's I love it. I listen to it all the time. Just like it's like that whole like level of talent where it's like different. So like you get
it's unique.
It is, and you get to that level to where you get this like almost cultish following, like you said, and like that. Kind of takes away from that, and so like, but it's almost like it's unavoidable because you kind of like just naturally put it out there.
Well, I think it hits that that spot. It's like, do you want to be someone who is chasing fame, like Lady Gaga? Like, love her, But she knew she wanted to be famous.
Mm-hmm. Fame monster.
She knew that she was craving that fame. No, I'm not attacking her. I'm making a statement. She knew that was her path.
That is, yeah.
And so Ethel followed a path similarly.
Even if you listen to the music and the music videos and even like what's on there out on Instagram and TikTok, it's very much like, it's not showy. It's not just very like...
No, it is here, not. Here's like, it is not
grunge
showy.
Grunge is not the right word.
It is not.
It's close to
depressing.
Grunge. It is. It's very like, it's just like, that's. It's not, it's just, she's just...
It's chance.
It's very experimental.
Yeah.
Experimental. That's the word I'm looking for.
Experiential.
What's the word?
You know, like, it's just because she's doing, you know, like, but I love it. I can't. I love
yeah,
it.
Yeah. Like, I think it's unique. Good for her. I am not.
Good for her.
Good for her.
Everybody's
but
so
like,
creative.
But exactly. Everyone has a uniqueness, nerve, and talent that
good
I don't.
Good for her.
Good for her. Oh my goodness. For her. I'm glad she's doing it. But like, I do understand, like, that's what, like, if we had recorded this last week, I would have been like, shut the fuck up. Like, you are famous, like, get over it. And now I'm sitting here like, okay, like, I mellowed out on it, I felt it, like, I understand, I passed the vibe check, I got there, and like, I was like, okay, I understand kind of where you're coming from. Like, you hit a certain level, you really just, like, wanted to share your art, and your art became, like, worldwide, and suddenly everyone loves you, and everyone's
like,
that's
what, when people have their own, like, little labels, and they release it via, like... release it via like these like smaller like, you know, like
niche
TikTok.
Underground
yeah like that's how you're not, or else you would send out, it's not like, you know, like we talked about Madonna sending out your demo tapes and recording this and sending it to this label and contacting this agent. That's not what she did. She just put it out. It's just, it got,
she put it on the internet,
it got viral, like, yeah. You know, she would have been no one 20 years ago, 10 years ago, 5 years ago, but that's just how it, oh shit. You know, but that's how you become now. Like, all it takes is one hook and it's on TikTok. And, you know, I mean, look at, like, now.
But, like, what's even worse is reverse. Artists who are not, like, platformed already, who maybe have released one album, are now being challenged to release the next viral thing. And so, like,
it's
that's
hard,
how
yeah.
artists are being discovered nowadays, and how artists are being pushed is, like, you have to create a viral song on TikTok that people will dance to.
It is.
Like,
it's a sword that cuts
fucking ridiculous.
Race. That's a
yeah.
Mommy Dearest deep dive.
Oh.
But, that's the Pepsi speech, she says.
Pepsi? I'm just kidding. Keep going.
She does
no,
not
I'm
back
done.
Down. You know, it's a catch 22. You want the fame, but at the same time, you don't want to do the sellout thing. And that's probably, I feel like that's where she's not trying to sell out, but like everybody's like all over her, and it's just, it's, you know, people come there and it's like, she didn't want people to come there because they, you know, are devoted to her and like doing all this crazy stuff. It's just about the story. But because if you really listen to the album and you just get the vibe check of the album, like, it's very dark, it's very gothic, it's very religious in the sense that, like, exploring yourself and being like, what the fuck did I grow up in and how am I dealing and healing?
Well, so her fans apparently did not pass the vibe check. So
she's like, I'm over you.
She's like, I'm over y'all bitches. Like, apparently some of them are out here stalking her.
I'm not stalking her.
I don't know. You stalk a lot of people.
I do, and I'm very good at it.
But apparently, you're sitting on this podcast.
But like you said, she's got like all these different. Well, like you said, there's all these different personas, all these different monikers, all these different, because they're exploring different aspects. Like the preacher.
What'd you call me? An aspect?
An asset?
The preacher's daughter. The preacher's daughter album explores a lot of like her upbringing and like the religious trauma and like all of that and some of these other
upbringer
apparently know her, you know, and I know it's one of my favorite jokes that everyone will say and say it all the time.
No, I fucking love it. Keep going.
You know, like, but like, and all these different. But if you read all these different parts, these different names, White Silas, they all explore like different aspects of her. I think it's kind of cool because it's like, you know, she's made up of all of these different experiences and trying to figure out, like, what the fuck am I?
Yeah.
Who am I? You know, and, like, because she's, like, what, 12? Not but, really, but, like, 20, 23?
25.
20, oh, 25. Oh, I thought that, yeah. I mean, it's young. It's a baby.
It's baby. I mean, it's giving baby.
I had two kids by then, but whatever. Yeah.
Anyways, but no, like, that's what I'm trying to say is, like, yeah. I... Like, last week, I'd have been like, oh, my God, you're famous. Get over it. Like,
yeah. Like you're a model.
You're like, you, literally, she is. She's a model. Like,
she is. And she, I mean, if you...
She's gorgeous.
If you look at her walking the right, it's she fits the vibe.
She yeah. Fits, like, she passes the vibe check.
She does. It,
she really does.
That whole look.
She's gorgeous. She's a model. So oh, my beautiful. God. You can. Did you stone those tights? No. She actually is gorgeous, and, like, she actually is a model, and, like, she does have a very good voice. But, like, she knew that. Like, why else the fuck would you make this stuff if you didn't think that you could, I mean, have a voice? Like, yeah. And she has a voice now. And so, like, last week I was grumpy and was like, oh, my God.
Just
like,
last week.
You're famous. Get over it. And now I'm like, oh, my God. Like, I guess I can see it because, like, fans are fucking awful. So, like.
You know.
Because I'm one of
them. No, Willem, you have lots of fans.
Oh, your fans. Yes. My fans cancel me on Twitter all the time.
Yep.
Well, no, I love
and that's that. Why I'm not on Twitter anymore.
That's I would play this. I would play this entire album on like 20%. I would be like, "Hey Siri,
but 20
this.
Like your phone's on 20."
No, yeah, like really low. Like,
oh,
like, you don't have to play it low. Sleep. She already.
Well, no, but that's what I would go to sleep to. Like, because I don't, I can't sleep with silence. I can't. I have to. There has to be some kind of noise.
You know how I fall asleep? What the fuck is happening?
Hanging from the ceiling. Hanging from the ceiling.
Upside down.
Upside
next
down.
To some stranger. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
what was that? But no, but I would say, I love it. Yeah. So I don't know where I was going with that, but I thought.
It's Halloween.
For like a year, I listened to like this. That's what I. Until I moved in with Ben, and I can't listen to it. I don't
Bennett?
Listen to it. Ben and oh. He doesn't. Oh my god! And I, but that I because I don't sleep like to sound. I have to sleep to. Oh, I knew. I have to have some kind of noise. I can't have just silence. Oh, but anyway, how do you fall asleep? How do you sleep? How do you sleep?
Poorly. How do you sleep?
With wine.
I just pass out.
Honestly.
I just pass out. I wake up a couple times to pee in the middle of the night because I'm old.
Yeah, me too.
And then I inevitably I wake up and I'm like, oh my god, what time is it? And the alarm goes off.
Yeah,
I hate it.
You guys, I just got a text that said, "Kevin, I have arrived at the airport in Los Angeles. Where are you? We got to wrap this up."
Kevin,
we got to wrap this up.
Kevin, we got to wrap this up.
I fell asleep. Kevin.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you for listening to our podcast and kicking with us this week. A special thank you to. Do you finish? Yeah.
No.
Oh, I'm she's. Still...
oh,
did
I finish? Oh, it's not the first time he said that. Are you done yet? Are you done yet?
You've done yet. Oh, God. Scared the shit out of you.
Did you finish?
And your face when I said no is.
No, he's talking about something else.
Oh.
A different encounter.
Oh, wait, that's not what he's talking about?
No, what are you talking about?
You said you finished him like that's not the first time he's heard that.
That's not the first time.
That's why I said pull up your pants and go home.
That's not the first time I said that to someone.
Oh.
Are you finished yet?
Go home.
Go home.
Kevin.
Anyway.
I gotta go pick up Kevin. All right.
Yeah, we're gonna get Kevin. Okay.
Sorry. All right. So thank you for listening to our podcast this week and kicking with us. A special thank you to the guy who keeps our sound in check, Spencer. All right, and with that, we're here.
We're queer.
Get used to it.